Welcome, welcome everybody to the American Overlander podcast. I am your host, Will Fowler from Venture to Rome. I am here with my best buddy in the whole world, Chris, from Frontier State Overland. And we are coming to you live from Hawaii. It is Thanksgiving vacation, and we have been in Hawaii for 7 days.
Oh man, it has been an epic trip.
It's been really great. We've done a little bit of everything. We've done beaches, we've done nothing. Then we've done some off-roading and found some amazing sights to see.
And yes, you heard that right, off-roading.
We did void the warranty on our rental cars on this trip. And I don't think anything's wrong.
No.
With my Jeep.
No.
Certain light came on my dashboard, which makes me a little suspect that I might get a bill for it.
Yeah, that was after the trip.
That's true. That's
that was like going to pick up Malasadas.
I think it's because these Jeeps that we rented, mine has 56,000 miles on it, and that's 56,000 rental miles, which is equivalent to like 300,000 normal miles, I think.
Yeah, pretty much. And you know what? The other thing is that we caught Jeeps with the 2-liter turbos.
Yeah.
Which we didn't know.
Such
at first.
A surprise.
We're like, what is wrong with these Jeeps?
They sound different. It feels different. Although mine, I was like, yeah, it's punchy. It feels like it's got a lot of power.
Yeah. But I have to say, like, I was surprised, like, pleasantly surprised by the 2-liter turbo.
Part of it's because I'm used to driving the JK, which has a 5-speed transmission, and the JL has the 8-speed transmission.
Yeah.
So that alone, I think, keeps you in the power band a little bit better
mm-hmm.
than even if it's a 2.0 turbo 4-cylinder.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the 2-liter turbo. And the thing with the turbo is you kind of have to drive it. Like, what we found is that you have to kind of drive it hard to keep that turbo going.
Yeah,
like
that's
keep
right.
it spooled up.
Yeah, you got to punch it.
And when you do that, it's, like, happy. It just, like, goes.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
But we're kind of getting ahead of ourselves. That's, like, for another episode.
Right, that's for the next episode.
Yes, off-roading in Hawaii.
Off-roading in Hawaii. So this episode, we're talking about the Idaho BDR. So we're still just reminiscing about the BDR. Chris and I last night were sitting in Hawaii in the hot tub planning our 2023 trips and just remembering how amazing the Idaho BDR was. And we're thinking we want to do something like that again in 2023, maybe pieces of the Idaho BDR and then figuring out maybe a different BDR to do. So as we were planning our 2023 adventures, we were talking about the fact that like, the YouTube channel, in some ways, is selling fantasy. Like, it's selling the fantasy of going on these amazing, epic adventures. But it's not our fantasy. It's our reality. And it's not just that. Like, I don't want to say, like, it's a fantasy channel and, like, you know, people are watching. That's why they're watching. But it's a
reason. Ooh la la.
Yeah. It's a reason that some people watch it and other people watch it for different reasons. But part of it is that it's, going on these adventures that are presented this way is a bit of a fantasy, but it's not our fantasy. It's like every day. And
yeah, well, when you said like, well, it's kind of pushing fantasy, like I kind of pushed back on that pretty hard
yeah.
at first. And I was like, yeah. Well, I don't think so, because this is what we do. And we're not like creating like, well, I should say we, you're not creating anything that's not true.
That's right. Yeah.
Everything that's on the videos that Will does is 100% accurate.
Yeah.
And like he doesn't like cut things to make it like more extreme or whatever, but it is like just kind of our way of life when we head out.
Yeah. Okay. So we're talking about that though, and like our what we do, it's not like people fantasize to be us, but because we live where we live, and some of these outdoors places are so accessible, and it's so important to you and I to get out and experience those in the way that we do. You know, it is not everyone's everyday life.
Yeah.
Well, even though it's ours.
Exactly.
And my biggest fear is that it becomes pedestrian for us.
Well, yeah. But the thing is that there's just so much room. And that's something that, like, I take for granted is because where we live, there's so much public land. And there's so many places, like, both in Idaho and in Oregon.
Wyoming. Montana.
Yeah.
Utah.
Nevada. Colorado is not far away either.
No.
So Utah, yeah. I mean, you said Utah, right?
Yeah, I said Utah. I mean, but okay. It's got so much public land. Yeah.
Yeah. So Idaho is kind of like just surrounded by all these like pretty awesome places. Washington, we even say Washington.
Yeah, of course.
So that you know, it's just like a lifetime exploring right there. And I would just call that like you know, some people call it the Pacific Northwest. We call it like the Mountain West,
mm-hmm.
and you whatever you call it, like out west, there's so much room.
Yeah, it's our national treasure, I think.
Yeah.
The Western public lands is a massive national treasure to the United States that the East doesn't have, because the East was settled and developed first, and they had to like experience life without public lands to know how great it was when they came west. And it was Teddy Roosevelt who was like, we got to do something about this. We got to make sure that this does not get developed like we've done in the East and preserve it. And that's why we have what we have in the West. And I, for one, am so grateful that that happened.
Well, and that kind of ties it back a little bit, like, into when we started, like, this whole podcast is Roosevelt and Gifford Pinchot.
Yeah, that's right.
Right? Like, these are guys who were Easterners. And in the case of Gifford Pinchot, like, his family had made a fortune off of
timber
in Pennsylvania, right?
Yes.
And like they
clear cutting Pennsylvania forests.
Yep. And they built a castle like in this like clear cut forest and stuff. And it was something where, you know, the great or the grandson of the guy that had founded this timber empire in the New World, had became this, like this huge advocate for, sustainable forests.
Yeah.
Here in the U.S. And, you know, and Idaho, Washington, Oregon, Montana, Colorado, we all like reap the benefits of that.
Yep, so so true, man. So here we are on the BDR. And by the way, when we finished the BDR, like after we recovered a few days later, my next thought was like, let's do it again. So I'm not to that place yet where I think, oh, you know, it's just another forest. It's just my biggest fear. Okay, so Chris and I were recording this podcast in our little makeshift recording studio in our cabana in Hawaii. And it turns out we are being hit with a Hawaiian storm. So what's happened is we've all kind of cuddled into one cabana and we've been joined by Kate and Elsha. And so the good news is we're not being rained on yet. And the girls can join us to talk about their experience of driving up the Gold Fork Mountain outside of Yellow Pine. So Elsha, it was your first real off-road experience with your new Gladiator, right?
It was, and it was one of those things where I was a bit nervous because I didn't have stock tires, they were mudders, you know, so I'm like, okay, that's better than stock, but at the same time, I mean, I knew that I didn't have a lot of the mods that I wanted to do, like a lift or, you know, so I was kind of worried about my clearance. I was honestly, I think, probably most scared about the sidewall punctures. And it was like my first time driving my rig off road. So it was slightly nerve wracking because I didn't know how she would handle and what she would do.
So we like looked at a camp spot that was on the river before we went up, the side of the mountain. And I was like, oh yeah, this campsite's fine, but it's a little too small. Let's go up the mountain. And I was convinced that it would be an easy 3 miles. But then as we got into it, we realized it was much different than that.
Yeah.
Kate, you were riding with Elsha, right?
I was. There was no room for me in our Jeep because Will had all his camera gear for the whole BDR.
She says with slight disdain.
I do. But it was awesome to get to experience Elsha's first, like, real deal off-roading experience in Pixie. And it was like, it was a grueling trip, which we did not anticipate, right? I think that was part of it. Like, it was a surprise. So we weren't mentally necessarily prepared for what was happening. But I will tell you, one of the best parts about that whole drive was like the teamwork in that rig of ladies, like all three of us between Elsha driving, me like spotting, and then May in the back spotting. It was like all three of us were a team helping get up this road. So it was really special and I'm grateful.
There was one moment where like, Elsha got on the radio and she was like, Will, I just want to tell you, I love your wife so much more right now. And I think it had something to do with like you coaching her on how to get into four low or something.
I think it was how to use the gearing. Yeah, take it out of auto and basically use manual.
There was two times. I mean, I could get into four high pretty easily, but I was honestly nervous about cranking it down into four low. And Kate's like, no, she's like, girl, you just got to grab it. She's like, you just got to use some muscle. And she's just like, cranked it down. And I was like, oh, I love you.
But you guys shifted the transmission into neutral first, right?
I'm pretty sure we did.
Probably. Probably.
It probably wouldn't have gone in if you did.
No, it was, there was a second time, I think, that when we were on our descent the next day, when Kate showed me the gearing, and I was like, just to like let the engine slow itself down, I was just like, oh God, I love you so much more than I ever did.
Well, because you were like really pumping the brakes, and I could tell like that you needed the engine to help you out.
Yeah.
So we got up to Gold Fork, the top of Gold Fork, and it was a, in some ways, a really beautiful campsite, but in some ways not a great campsite because it was not level. There was a mine, an open mine that was like a 50-foot drop on the edge of camp that made us all a little nervous about the kids, but we had pretty incredible views of the valley below, of Yellow Pine below, and of the backcountry planes coming and going from the airport. So we're up here, we set up camp, and Alsha, you brought so much food. Basically, you turned your Gladiator into a food mobile to feed the 11 people that were eating. And you did some, it was like crazy nachos that night, right?
I can't remember what I made that night. I do remember
like pork nachos or something.
Oh yeah, that was really good. Those were tasty. It's one of our favorites. But no, I just remember we did do Spam the next day because the dog was looking very longingly at the Spam. And I was like, yeah, no way. But that's kind of all I remember. Like that night was just, it was just so much fun. Like the camaraderie of like hanging out, like getting to know Rob a little bit better. Hanging out with Kate's parents was amazing. And I mean, the kids, like, you know, helping them, like, I mean, they pitch in and help set up camp. And it was just really great time, just laid back and just getting to know each other all a lot better.
Yeah. So okay, so that night we all kind of came together as a little bit more of a team than just like a group of strangers, because some people had never met, many people had never met. And then the next morning we get up, we come down the mountain. It was still a slow trek to come down the mountain because there were obstacles that were fine going up that we had to kind of adjust going down. So it sounds like we cut some wood and move some, I know I moved some rocks and some logs and things coming down, but we got down in reasonable time, get in a yellow pine. Yellow pine allows us to have 4 gallons of gas instead of 2 gallons of gas. And then from yellow pine, we set off towards, well, we thought we were going to Warren. We're like, we're going to Warren tonight, or Bergdorf. We were like, let's go to Bergdorf. We're gonna spend the night. We're gonna sit in the hot springs. It's gonna be great. So we get started and we quickly run into bear grass, which was kind of the first hint of bear grass that we saw many times on the trip. But we were heading towards Elk Summit. And Elk Summit is the highest peak on the BDR tour. It's about 9,000 feet. And we had heard a bunch of differing reports on whether or not there's gonna be snow at the top of Elk Summit. And so we're driving up, we can kind of see snow in the shadows of the mountain as we're driving up. But at this point, I was riding in the rig with Rob. So Rob could drone, we were kind of switching off. He droned, then I drone, and we kind of switched driving the rigs. We were in the back of the line. Kate, you were driving Finn at the front of the line, and you were the first to hit the snow at the top of Elk Summit.
Yes, I was, which was, I'll tell you, like in the moment I was like, I've experienced this before and we've gotten Finn stuck, but you know, I felt like it doesn't look that bad. I mean, it really didn't look that bad. So I was like, we can do this. I can handle this, but it was good. It was fun. And I did fine.
But spring snow sometimes is the worst snow because you just stop.
I know, but I think I just knew, like instinctually, I knew it was going to be fine. So I remember like there was sort of, I don't like exactly remember, but it was something like, maybe a rock or something on the left. And so I was like, put a tire on it. Like,
it was. You did You did a nice approach to the left because I was right behind you. And I was just like, oh, yeah. Just want to mention, Kate can get Finn through a snowbank without getting stuck. Sorry, boys.
Yeah. So I put a tire on it just like I've been taught. And it was fine.
Yeah. Yep. So we made it through Elk Summit. And then at that point, it was probably like 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And we've been driving all day. We're trying to make it to Warren, and we saw, and on the radio, we started having this debate basically about how far Warren was and how much time we had left in the day. It was like 104 degrees.
It was hot. It was getting hot from where we started.
And so we started kind of aiming towards the North Fork of the Salmon River. And we came down to a campground called Schieffer or Schieffer.
Mm-hmm.
Schieffer Campground right on the river. And it was, I'm not kidding you, it was 101 degrees when we pulled into camp. And we were all about cooling off. And some of us cooled off more than others. In fact, there's one in this cabana that just went kind of all in the river immediately.
It was really hot, and we kind of pulled into a campsite, you know. At least kids didn't see anything.
It was totally secluded.
It was totally secluded. There was no one else around. We figured out this campsite was completely empty. We kind of pulled into the first camping spot, and we were debating, like, access to the river. Kate and I walked farther down to the very last campsite, and there was this beautiful rock and this, like, nice little deep pool area. And I just said, you know, why the heck not?
I mean, Elsha's first thought was to drop trowel and get in the river. There's a river. There's no one around.
There's no one around.
I think I'll just...
It's fine. And then later, when I found out that both Will and Rob had drones flying over the river, and I'm like, oh.
That wasn't a coincidence, by the way.
But I was like, well, they might have gotten a little bit more than they bargained for.
And I think you invited Kate to go in, too. And Kate was like,
Yeah, I said... I don't like to be cold, and I was afraid the river was too cold.
Pass. So,
of course, Will, you got into the river, but for a different reason.
Yeah, that's true. So before dinner, which we'll get to what Elsha made for dinner, which is amazing, I had that day, so driving to get there, we had gone through some roads that had been, that needed some work. So Rob has... I mean, I give Rob a hard time because his Tundra is wide and tall, but he ran into some trees. We needed to widen some trail for him, and it turns out the Tundra is really not that much wider than a Jeep, but it was just wide enough that we wanted to move some things around for him to get through. So I was doing that. I was up front and I was trying to move some branches, but I couldn't quite reach the branch. And so I tried to jump off of my bumper to grab the branch and land safely, but I did not land safely. I landed like an idiot.
I mean, I just want to say, the way you just described it, like, do you think...
This is how it sounded in my mind, yeah.
Exactly. You must imagine yourself to be, like, some kind of, like, a Thor character in, like, Marvel comics.
I mean, I'm wearing a towel as a cape at the moment, so that's not too far off the truth. Yeah, I really imagined myself doing one of those kind of Marvel landings where one knee goes down and then, like, I swoop my hair back. And
the world shudders for a moment.
And everyone claps. And instead, I landed in my flip-flops on the side of my ankle and started hopping around like a wounded bunny. So
we were... He's like, Will's like Thor's less successful little brother.
Yeah.
Will.
Yeah, basically just Will. So
maybe Thor or Will.
So I'm soaking my ankle in the cold water of the river, which felt really, really good. And this is when Elsha starts making dinner, which was some kind of crazy, amazing zoodle Thai dish.
It's a takeoff of a Thai dish called Pad Khi Mao, which is Thai drunken noodles, and you can buy them like in street vendors in Thailand. And no one, I think, like I did some research. No one knows why it's called Thai drunken noodles. Do you eat them because you're drunk and they help you sober up, or I don't know? But they are amazing. But we have so many people who are, you know, I mean, we're getting older. We're getting a little more carb conscious. So instead, Emerson was there. I brought my zoodle maker. He totally helped me make this huge pile of zucchini noodles. So I just used the same sauce and the chicken and the veggies, and it seemed to go over well.
It was delicious. I still need to get that recipe from you because, yeah, we ate like we hadn't been fed in a week. It was so good.
I think everyone was disappointed, like, if they didn't get seconds or thirds. They're sure. Like, where is the rest of this food? So thank you, Elsha. That was an amazing meal. We had to put that in a cookbook, like a camping cookbook, because it was so good on the trail. I think that's a good recipe anytime, but it was especially good on the trail.
Definitely.
So here we are, this kind of motley crew of friends, family, all coming together. We've been on this crazy trip up and down a mountain. Our gas had been rationed. We were kind of unsure of whether or not we could get to, or we needed to get to in time, because Kate had to go back to work on Monday, and this was Saturday night. We had planned to get all the way to Bergdorf, which is not very far away from McCall, Idaho, spend the night in Bergdorf, and then drive in the morning, drop everybody off, and then me, Chris, and Rob would continue on. But what happened is we got like two-thirds of the way to Bergdorf, and then we had to stop in camp because we were so tired and it was so late.
Yeah, we just weren't making the progress that we thought we were going to make either.
Yeah, it was like a theme.
It was very slow going.
Yeah, it was like a theme for the whole trip. So we get there, and we have this kind of really great evening where we all cool off, we wind down, and then the next day we knew we were going to have to like kind of double up.
Yeah,
and
this cannonball, like all the way to McCall.
Yep. And the next day was full of activity. We wound up on a river the next night as well, but that's where we're going to leave this podcast for now, is all of us eating zoodles, eating, what's it called, Elsha?
Pad Ki Mau
on the North Fork of the Salmon River. Next time we come back together, we'll talk about how we made it to the main fork of the Salmon River, which was a series of incredible, amazing events as well. So thank you for listening to this podcast. We're again coming to you live from Hawaii. The storm's rolling in, and I gotta say, everyone at the resort has now left the pool, except for those hardcore overlanders who know they can survive a storm. So we're like
bring
one
on,
of maybe storm. 5 or 10 people left in a massive resort as the storm rolls in. So there you go. We are treating our cabana as an awning or a tent. We're huddled together. We know we're going to be fine, but thanks for listening. If you haven't subscribed to the podcast, please do so. If you haven't checked out our channel and subscribed to our YouTube channel, please do that as well. We really appreciate it. Every subscriber helps. Every view matters. So thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you next time.